Hello, we're back. This is Left Out on WRCT 88.3. We're continuing our show today with something that's been going on. It's a very disturbing story that's been going on in Western Pennsylvania for probably a decade now, and it's a story of longwall mining. So let me just give you a little bit of background about what this is. So this is a technique for mining. It was developed in Germany originally. And the idea of it is that you can more efficiently mine if you can dig very, very wide tunnels under the ground. And if you get your machines in there quickly and get them out. So these tunnels are 1,000 feet wide and 10,000 feet long. It's like 2 miles by a quarter mile. They dig that stuff out. They dig the coal vein out of that area. They get the equipment out of there quickly. Within a day or so, it subsides. It just falls down. So the plan is, the whole system is designed to dig the coal out, not leave any supporting infrastructure in there. The old-fashioned style of mining was to leave walls and leave pillars inside. You just mine around them. That's harder. It's more work. It's more labor-intensive. It's not as efficient. You don't get everything out. In longwall mining, they take everything out. Then they pull the machines out of the mine, and all the coal, of course, has been pulled out. And then within a day or so, it collapses. And the subsidence that occurs goes all the way up to the surface, of course, and it's all planned and it's all part of the whole process. This was invented in Germany. It was used in Germany for a while and then it was outlawed. It's not used in Europe anymore. But subsequently, those companies that developed the system exported their technology, and it's now being used in, among other places, in Western Pennsylvania. In 1994, there was a law passed. Forgot the number of the bill, but this law, what it said was, what's it called?
Act 57.
Act 57. This allowed the mining companies, they could get a permit to mine. They had to repair the damage on the surface. And now, there's two types of damage that occur as a result of longwall mining, at least. One is the damage to the structures on the surface. For example, houses. That's the biggest thing. When a large old house, when the subsidence occurs near the house, it can be devastating to the entire foundations, walls, everything is just so damaged that it may not be repaired or cost a tremendous amount to repair it. So the first thing is they're supposed to repair the damage to the buildings on the surface. It's part of the deal. The other type of damage that occurs is environmental damage. And the most serious one of those is damage to the water system. So the effect of this mining is to, in many cases, to destroy streams. Streams will disappear. Lakes will disappear because there's a hole in the ground under the subsidence occurs and the water drains out of the lake. And springs will disappear. And also wells will stop functioning. So there'll be a farm. The farm will have wells on it. And those wells are used. That is the standard method of getting water in southwestern Pennsylvania is through wells, local wells on the farms. And those wells stop functioning. Now, it makes it extremely difficult to operate a farm it's impossible without water. And they're supposed to pay for water to be trucked in, but it's incredibly difficult. And you have to conserve water. And it's just, it makes life much, much harder. So, That's the story, the big story about longwall mining. But despite the fact that there's all this terrible damage that occurs and lives are disrupted, communities are disrupted, it's still illegal and still going on right now in the state of Pennsylvania. We have a caller now. Could you join us?
Hey, Danny.
Hi, Terry. Let me introduce you. This is Terry Taylor, who has done a documentary about longwall mining. And Terry, did you hear the introduction I just gave?
Just a bit of it, Danny. I'm sorry. I had car trouble, and I'm talking to you on my cell phone. So I heard some of the things. The one where I picked up with you was you were talking about Act 57. It's actually Act 54.
Oh, sorry.
And no, that's quite all right. It's one of those laws that not many people know very much about, but if you've got coal underneath your property, you're going to find out fast.
Is there anyone around here who doesn't have coal underneath their property?
Well, if it's been excavated, you know, the Pittsburgh seam is the richest coal seam in the world. It runs from pretty much the middle of Pennsylvania, up by the New York border, all the way down to Kentucky. And maybe there's a good 20 years of easy plunder, and then another 200 years of picking around to get it up. But the strategy of the coal companies at this point is just to get it out as fast as they possibly can. And so in the longwall mining method, they're down about 600 feet underground, pulling out the purest of the vein. And these machines, people should understand, are just monstrous. A typical longwall, one unit is 1,500 feet across, and it kind of moves through big marked-out panels of coal, not unlike a salami slicer or just a giant Norelco shaver, and it chips out about a six-foot piece of the coal, six-foot depth, and, you know, everything above subsides. You know, the normal subsidence, we think about somebody's had a house, and, 20, 50, 100 years later, the earth subsides, their foundation cracks or whatnot. It doesn't happen to every house. It might happen to, you know, a couple. In longwall mining, everything subsides. The average subsidence is somewhere between 3 and 6 feet. So it's massive. It's not a question of whether you will subside or when you will subside. The subsidence is inevitable. And I think really because so much of this land is in rural Appalachia, the news just hasn't come out of especially Greene County at the southwestern corner of the state, just because, you know, it's a backwater there. And people are kind of in a company town mentality. And 40 miles from Pittsburgh, probably the worst of the ecological disasters dealing with mining is happening right under our nose. It's really my intention to put the issue on the kind of the national environmental agenda.
Well, and, good. I'm certainly glad you're doing
it. It's starting to come along.
Well, you know, the thing, the whole story is absolutely incredible. I've been following it really for probably about 5 years, and I can't tell you how many people I've told this story, and I'm quite sure that they think that I'm wrong or you know, completely nuts. Like, because it's sort of unthinkable that I don't think anyone realizes that some company can come along and undermine your house, crack the foundation, maybe if you have well water, you know, cut off your water supply. And, oh, well, that's the way it goes.
Well, yeah, you know, the issue in Pennsylvania, I mean, from back to the beginning of time, Pennsylvania was a particular state where the motto really between industry and politics was to plunder the earth, that is. To plunder is to prosper.
Right.
And we just can't seem to get that out of the capital.
So this is...
So what that means to the laws is that there are two sets of laws. There's the laws that govern industry, which are much more lenient than the laws that govern the people. If a longwall miner wants to go under longwall company, and these are multinationals, want to go on for the most part, want to go under your land, and they're going to crack all your streams and your watersheds, take your water and wreck your house, that's okay. But if a guy wants to divert one of his streams so that he makes a pond for his cows, that has to go through permitting up the yin-yang. So that's one kind of dichotomy. The other is that the surface rights are divorced from the mineral rights. So the mining company owns everything underground, and the property owners, the people, just own what's on the surface. And it's the guys underground, the big guys, that always win, that always hold sway. So, you know, there's a lot of places where the laws are not equal at all.
That's amazing to me. This law was passed in 1994. I mean, when I originally heard about this, I thought that it might be attributed to like a law from 1894. But this is a recent law. I mean, I'm amazed that they could have passed this.
Well, what happened, I mean, the mining laws were always bad. Because really, extractive industries are some of the most barbaric in the world. And you just can't go in and crunch stuff up and not harm everything around it. So mining laws were never good. But what happened in 94 was the longwall machinery, this whole system was developed in Germany. And the Germans said, well, we can't do this anymore. It's getting too close to the cities. It's, you know, and so they banned these machines. Well, what did they do? They put them on big boats, they broke them down, and they brought them over to Pennsylvania, to a real third world country.
But what, here's a question. What are these companies paying Now, they're supposed to repair the damage, which is just laughable, okay? You can't repair the damage on the houses, let alone the environment, which is impossible to repair.
Yeah, you can patch up a house.
Yeah, okay.
To some degree, sometimes. A lot of times the houses are total losses. I know just down in Fallowfield Township last week, 9 houses were damaged, and I think 3 of them are total losses. I mean, one of them was owned by an 85-year-old lady. I mean, the back of her house looks like a wrecking ball punched out the brick from the inside.
Jeez.
And, you know, she'll never go back into that house. And so that's when we talk about community shredding. I mean, long before the longwall mine gets anywhere near your home or your farm, you know it's coming and the stress begins. And, you know, we all know that stress kills, and stress is very hard on a community. In some panels, there might be 20 houses in a rural area. One particular panel I'm thinking of. Well, 11 of those people moved. They're gone.
So the community
is no longer the country relationship of, you know, you plow my driveway, I make the jam.
Yeah, right.
You know, those kinds of relationships that are so important in the country, let alone the fact that none of these people ever had city water or piped water.
Right.
So now their water supply is gone. The wildlife have nowhere to drink. The cows have nothing to drink. And the people have water in big, huge, you know, 500-gallon water buffaloes that are heavily chlorinated, leaching, you know, plastic, whatever. And that's what's happened to their independence, because they depended on their land, you know, to survive.
Yeah.
So now they're hooked into, you know, a city water supply or water trucks plying up and down the highways down there. It's a traffic jam. It's like Manhattan.
Who decides how much compensation they get when this happens?
Well, there's negotiations here and there. Maybe there's a settlement up front. They'll say something like, we'll give you $20,000. You fix it however you want. A normal settlement, if they're really going to screw up your house, is $50,000. Now, that sounds like a lot of money. But imagine that you have a farm, a family, and everything that you have is going to be shook upside down and broken up.
Right.
And you're poor. You might go and get a truck. You might get a trailer. You might, that money's going to go real fast. And then you're going to have nothing. And then in the spring, you know, you're not even going to be able to so much as grow a garden because you're not going to have the water to do it.
Right.
So the coal companies, it's nothing for them to buy people off with what to them is chump change. And what to many low-income people seems like a lot of money at the time. But the profits are so great that, you know, they could build people Taj Mahals and still make money.
Wasn't there a hunger striker in Harrisburg recently who was...
Yeah. Brandon Hudock, the young man, he just turned 28. And his family has a greenhouse business in Washington, PA, on the outskirts. It actually grows specialty poinsettias in cooperation with Penn State Agricultural Extension. They have, I don't know, 120 different kinds of poinsettias. And, you know, they have an active greenhouse with a lot of, I think, maybe 9 greenhouses. And the greenhouses are basically underwater now. You know, you can't grow plants in a swamp. And so where there didn't used to be water, the water has moved and it's now created a wetland, which isn't a particularly good thing in this case. And it cost that business, you know, over $1 million worth of damage. And
wow.
The coal company was just not willing to discuss it. And because in order for the Hudocks to repair their business, they would have to bring it up to new codes, which weren't in effect at the time that they originally built the structures.
Oh, I see.
And the coal company said, well, you know, that's not our friggin' problem. And so the thing was a Mexican standoff. And so, you know, Brandon took it upon himself to make as much noise as he could. He drove around Consult's headquarters in the South Hills in a panel van with big signs on the side that said, Consult, give us our lives back. He went on the hunger strike. He was up there for 70 days. And it's funny because he was in the Capitol Rotunda, which is all marble and very munificent and beautiful with, you know, frescoed paintings to the captains of industry in the dome. And the one that he sat on the marble steps in the rotunda that head up to the chambers, and he looked across to the one that was King Cole, all the cherubim and the miners and all this. I mean, incredible Italian fresco. But here again, you know, we're talking about where this state grew from way back when and how hard it is to change over these politicians. Very few of the men in suits talked to Brandon during those 70 days, but all the people did. the people who work there, the tour guides, the security guards, the secretaries, you know, the little people who understand what it's like to be so damaged by industry, but yet the big guys, our elected representatives, for the most part, walk stonily by. And even though there is legislation pending in both the House and the Senate to make some changes to Act 54, if you want my opinion, it'll be extremely difficult to get that stuff passed given the complexion of the legislature.
I see. I was going to ask you what you thought the prospects for change might be.
Well, legislatively, now,
yes.
Not good.
Oh, boy.
There are some legal cases that show promise. That's another way to go at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course,
if you got it to a jury that wasn't in Greene County or something.
It's hard to do, Danny. You have to go before the Environmental Hearing Board for a lot of this stuff, and that's a problematic court in and of itself.
I mean, it's just so outrageous. You could just hard to imagine a jury not being sympathetic to the plight of the people. And in your documentary, you can see that very clearly.
I just wanted to get back to the law for a second.
Okay,
what
sure.
happened in 1994? Because the coal company will always say things to these people like, to people in coalfield communities like, you knew there was coal under your property when you bought that house, and you knew that we had the right to take it, and you bought the house anyway. Shame on you.
Hmm.
And the reality is that until the law was changed in 1994, really in the dead of night, all homes that were built prior to 1966 were protected from longwall mining. They were basically grandfathered.
Oh.
And the mining company hated this because they were bringing in these huge machines that can't go around things, and they wanted to be able to go underneath everything. And so what Act 54 did was to remove those houses, you know, so basically they could mine under anything, provided that they would pay for the damage that they caused. And this is the caveat. As Danny said, a lot of this damage can't be fixed. You can't fix a stream. They try to glue them sometimes when there's one that gets some press, you know. You can't glue a stream. It just becomes like a stormwater channel, you know, because streams are fed from seeps and springs, and it's a watershed, man. So, you know, you can't fix nature. You can't fix the stress on the communities, the disruption, the emotional cost. And many times you can't fix the homes. And so we're seeing whole communities, little villages and so forth, basically empty out. These people are gone.
Boy, this is really sad.
And the funny thing is, if I could just add this, you know, it used to be that the mine did provide a lot of jobs, okay? Miners mined that coal by hand. But in the last 20 years, because of this mechanization, a longwall mine today is a couple of guys with these remote controls that look like Game Boys, and they just push buttons in a little handheld, you know, controller all day long to move this massive machine, and 95% of the mining jobs are gone in this state. And so I think finally people in coalfield communities are realizing that the mine took away, and it's not giving back anymore. It's not even giving back at the company store. It's taking and it's taking. They're double dipping now, and I think that people are starting to get angry. So if the legislation isn't going to be very effective unless it gets a lot of support, if the laws are hard to change or fight in court, then it's down to the people organizing, and I think it's in that where there's going to be the biggest political movement on this issue.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder whether your film is going to be shown anytime soon in the area, because many of our listeners might like to see it.
Well, it's not currently booked. I'd love to show it just about anywhere. You know, it's short enough that it can be at the top of many meetings, you know, of Rotary clubs, environmental groups. Just about anybody could sit down and spend 15 minutes watching this film and talking about it. But it would be important to get it into, you know, a couple universities or, I don't know, maybe over at Filmmakers, something like that in the near future.
Okay, I think
it really had quite a... Wherever it's been shown, it's really people have learned something that they may not have seen ever. They're quite shocked. And, you know, it's a teaching film, so I can't give any dates, but hopefully we'll be able to do that soon.
Okay, it's called Subsided Ground, Fallen Futures.
Yep.
And we hope maybe with Danny and I can look into it. We might be able to get it aired here. We're doing the same with some other political films. One is showing in 2 weeks here, actually, that was produced by Move On. Not related to this topic, but it's same sort of general vein. So we might be able to get an airing for you.
Sure. We can bring some mining activists in and some people have been affected and have a hoedown.
Okay, thank you, Terry. Thank you for calling in. I'm sorry your car broke down. I hope you're like not sitting on the side of the road or something.
I'm actually, I'm sitting in a parking lot somewhere, so we don't have motor noise. But
oh no,
so not to worry.
Okay, you've got transportation.
Yeah, we're gonna limp along home
somehow or other. Okay, well, thank you very much for calling. We appreciate it.
All righty, take care.
Bye.
Let's take a little break, and you can give us a call at 412-621-9728. We'll be back.